Senate Committee on Labor, Consumer, and Business Affairs, Friday, February 2, 1979, 1 p.m., Hearing Room B. Executive Appointment, Robert L. McAllister, Member, Workers' Compensation Board. Hearings on Senate Bill 330 relating to collective bargaining by public employees, Senate Bill 255 relating to the State Accident Insurance Fund, and Senate Bill 336 relating to consumer protection.
First on the agenda will be the regarding the executive appointment of Robert L. McAllister as a member of the Workers' Compensation Board. Mr. McAllister, would you please come up here to the stand? You want to talk about yourself a bit?
Not one of my most favorite subjects. What would you like to know?
Whatever you want to tell us.
Well, I am presently employed at Georgia Pacific Corporation. I have been for...
Mr. McAllister, could you get a bit closer to the microphone, please?
I have been for 14 and a half years and responsible for the workers' compensation program. We have rather extensive programs. We're self-insured and are self-insured in 38 states. Prior to that, in addition at Georgia Pacific, I am involved in the Equal Employment Opportunity and am in charge of their Affirmative Action Program for hiring the handicapped and have other sundry duties assigned at the pleasure of my boss, who is the safety director. Prior to that, I worked for the Employers Insurance of Wausau as an adjuster and as a claims examiner. While there, I was the supervisor of their rehabilitation programs. Before that, I worked for the federal government, for the National Security Agency, and before that, I was a truck driver for my father, who was in business in Eugene, Oregon for many, many years. And
Bob, how are you?
I grew up in Eugene and graduated from the University of Oregon. Married, my wife Mary works for an attorney in Portland who does not become involved in workers' comp. Have four very beautiful children, a daughter at Portland State and a son at Stanford and a daughter at Drake University in Iowa and a young daughter at Grant High School in Portland.
Okay, are there any questions? Any member of the committee care to ask any questions?
Just one, Mr. Chairman. Why would anyone want to be appointed to the Workers' Compensation Board?
Well, I have a couple of reasons. I suppose the most compelling reason is that I don't want to move to Georgia. Being a third generation Oregonian. The other reason is that workers' comp is sort of not only my vocation, but my avocation. And I'm very excited about the possibility of having an opportunity to contribute something to the system.
Are there any further questions? If not, we will entertain a motion.
I so move, Mr. Chairman. Yeah.
Senator Hanlon's vote that we...
Mr. Chairman, before we do this, I understand it's proper now to ask a question. And at this time, I'm going to ask a question that has been asked previously in these sorts of things. Is there anyone in this room in support of this appointee? Thank you. Now I can vote, Mr. Chairman. For your information, this is another little play. That question was asked under another appointment of the governor's, and no one was there to support him, and therefore it looked like he was all alone, which of course he wasn't. But you have a lot of friends, not only out there, but here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hanlon?
Aye.
Senator Hannon?
Aye.
Senator Smith?
Aye.
Senator Kroll?
Aye.
Senator Wingard? Senator Coolangatta?
Aye.
Senator Groner?
Aye. Thank you for being here with us, Bob. I think it's your statement, the reason that you accepted this, that you just didn't want to go to Georgia.
Well, that's somewhat being a little facetious, really. But true.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next bill, Senate Bill 336, and the Senator Hannon.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the reason for this bill is that we had a case recently in Medford where a person had an injured back and went to one of these so-called health spas to take a purchase an agreement to work out and condition herself, and it came to our attention that she then went back to her attending physician, and the physician instructed her not to utilize this equipment. She then went back to the health spa and tried to cancel out the purchase of this program, and the person who owned the health spa said, well, you can cancel out if you're willing to pay us X amount of dollars. And she said, no, I'm under my physician's order not to utilize this equipment. And then it became subsequent that she was either going to be faced with a lawsuit over the compensation of paying this health spa, or be faced with paying the full purchase price. And the Southern Oregon delegation met with this family prior to the convening of the legislature, and that was the reason for the introduction of this bill. It kind of creates a cooling off period for not only health spas, but other purchase programs as well. It's apparently a bill that was introduced in the last session. I was not aware of it, but apparently the bill was introduced in the last session and did not get out of committee.
Okay, are there any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Crowe.
I'm a little confused, Senator. This bill applies only to this category of businesses?
Health bar, reducing salon, dance studio, martial arts studio, or correspondence educational program.
Now, is this all the businesses it should apply to, or should it apply to any business?
Mr. Chairman, what we tried to do was identify currently under statutes that do not fall under the cooling off period, and these apparently were the ones that
These are the only ones who do not fall under this?
As we could best determine from our research into this issue, yes.
The cooling off statutes cover other businesses and do about the same as this would do.
The consumer protection that was passed in previous sessions.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Hanlon? Oh, I thought you had it. Any other questions? If not, do you think the bill is in good shape? Or are you satisfied?
Mr. Chairman, we haven't received any response, and if there's someone here that's to oppose it or support it or whatever,
does anyone here want to appear on 336? Yes. Give your name for the record, please.
Chairman, my name is Mark Nelson, Executive Assistant to the Attorney General. I apologize. The Chief Counsel of the Consumer Protection Division is in trial today. He basically believes very much in this type of legislation. He does see, however, some problems in the way it's been drafted. The FTC currently is reviewing a rule as it relates to health spas, and it's expected that that rule will probably take another 3 to 12 months before it's enacted. It deals with the cancellation of a contract as it relates to health spas in this type of industry. We think it's going to call for a, say you sign up for a 2-year program. After 90 days, 6 months, you find that the program simply is not doing the job that it was designed to do and you wish to cancel. It would set up a provision where you would have to pay a cancellation fee, but you would get the money back for that year of services that you did not receive. I believe that Mr. Rayborn of the Consumer Protection Division feels that the 3-day cooling off period in this type of contract is not enough. He would probably like to approach it in terms of what we think the FTC is going to do, and that is if you have a 2-year contract and you want to pull out after the first year, that you pay a cancellation fee, but you receive back the money spent for that second year. He believes that there are some language problems in the bill, but does support the concept of the bill. He would like to see it perhaps written very much in the same way the home solicitation bill was written in the past, and there are many aspects within this bill that are already there, but basically supports the concept and would like the opportunity to appear before the committee with some suggested amendments.
Dave, do you have any objections?
No, I don't, Mr. Chairman.
Would you be willing to work with the Attorney General's office
and
bring back some recommendations?
We apologize for not contacting Senator Hannon sooner on this bill, as he just simply did not have the time.
Did Legislative Council draft it?
Yes, it did.
You know who is the representative there?
No, I don't, Senator, but I can find out. I
would suggest you bring him along, because he's the guy who put the language together down Legislative Council. Maybe he can probably work it out a little bit better.
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's go to Senate Bill 255, Jim Russell from the governor's office.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jim Russell. I am an assistant to the governor. I'm here this afternoon to provide some general background information on this bill and on some amendments to this bill that we are proposing today. The intent of this bill is to make the State Accident Insurance Fund a public corporation. We want to streamline its functions so that it can provide better service, lower premiums to the employers, and better service to the injured workers. I say general comments because I think there may very well be some further amendments that are forthcoming. In the bill, Section 6, for example, at this point provides a blanket inclusion of the fund as a domestic insurer subject to all the provisions of the insurance code unless the code is inconsistent with the provisions of Chapter 656 of the Oregon Revised Statutes. Questions concerning consistency and inconsistency have already arisen. There very recently has been a meeting of fund officials with private insurers, and it appears now that a better route would be to continue ORS 731-028 as it is, referring to specific sections in the insurance code, and adding additional sections to those code provisions that would apply to the fund. That way we would avoid the basic problem of trying to define what is consistent and what is inconsistent between the Workers' Comp Act, Chapter 656, and the insurance code, which encompasses a goodly number of chapters of the ORS. Section 9 is also creating some problems at present. Section 9.1 transfers motor vehicle accident fund duties to the Motor Vehicles Division. Subsection 2 transfers the Special Injury Fund, the Civil Defense Injury Fund, Inmate Injury Fund, and Crime Victims Compensation to the Workers' Comp Department. We've already heard from the Workers' Comp Department that it sees no advantage to assuming these claims payment functions and claims adjustment duties. They're basically a regulatory agency at present, particularly since the board functions had been removed from the department in the last session. And as you know, there's also the governor's Task Force on Workers' Compensation. Lee Johnson, when he spoke to the task force last Friday, one of the directions he included to them was to examine this question of the autonomy of the State Accident Insurance Fund, and he requested that they look at this picture also. I think that they would like to make some input to the governor on this question, and we hope to have their input in the very near future. Coming to the...
Jim, why don't we...
Yes, sir.
You're waiting for more input as far as the state is concerned, which may affect this bill. Why shouldn't we hold it over until we...
What I was...
...some word from the... Instead of taking any action on it now, or... In the near future, wait till we hear from the task force.
When the proposal was first made, the objective was to separate the fund out and make it as independent a corporation as possible. What happened was, in the initial drafting of this bill, because of some potential constitutional problems, Article 11, Section 2 requires that the legislature cannot create a corporation by a special act. It must be a general act. It was decided to set it up on a commission basis and create a State Accident Insurance Fund Commission, which the bill as now drafted does. The hope is that we could get back to the original concept of setting this up as a public corporation and delete reference to the commission. We were hoping that we could get an A. engrossed bill and deal with that particular question. Also, there were some additional items that would be... that the fund would be exempted from that are not included in this particular draft, the bill as it's now drafted. Certain fiscal chapters, the state merit system law, the public contract and purchasing laws, the public printing laws, regulation by the Department of General Services, creating the situation where the state financial administration provisions of 291 would not apply to SAFE, and ORS 292 dealing with salaries and expenses of state officers and employees. In other words, the market would establish these, and they would be independent of these particular provisions.
They would be all out as far as they is concerned.
Right, and the amendments that we have provided would pull them out. The original bill at this point does not. So we were hoping to get an AN gross bill that they could work with.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we're not going to go into this. I just want to understand exactly what is being proposed. I want the members to know that I appreciate the governor's office pirating my bill from last session with the five-member commission. You went into much more detail than I was intending, and that's what I want to ask you about. And, Jim, as I take what you said at the last, is really what your objective is to create a public corporation, a public insurance corporation.
That's right, sir.
And it's your intent to then have that corporation function no differently than you would a private insurance carrier in this state.
That's correct, except that the blanket inclusion under the insurance code would not apply completely. For example, the guarantee funds, guarantee fund provisions requiring contributions of private insurance carriers to this particular fund would not apply. I think everyone that I have been in contact with is in agreement on that, the insurance commissioner, the state accident insurance fund administrator. Virtually everyone is in agreement that guarantee fund, for instance, would not apply. This does, for instance, in Section 8, they would come under the licensing provisions, just as regular insurance carriers do. But there would be some exceptions in that area.
Yes, Chairman. Jim, and as I understood you to say, is that your idea of, or the reason why you're creating a five-member commission is merely to get to the position of a public corporation. And
under the amendments that we provide, it would not be a commission system. It would be a board of directors.
Would they be public or private? Quasi-public, rather? So it's a quasi-public position.
Yes. They would in effect have many of the powers and prerogatives of a private corporation.
As compared to a public commission completely, such as as the printed bill provides, just five public members appointed by the governor.
Yes, sir. This would be different. This board of directors would be in much greater control of the operations of the State Accident Insurance Fund. Indeed, in the amendments, we are suggesting that it be called the State Accident Insurance Fund Corporation.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay. Senator Hammond?
No.
Are you through?
Yes, fine.
I'm Senator Trump. Senator Trump, sorry.
That's
Senator
all right.
Takes a few years, but you'll get to know me.
No apologies.
I apologize. I apologize.
Okay, thank you. I noticed in the testimony, it's the first time I've heard about this bill, I've been gone before.
But I noticed that one of the reasons for moving this direction is, as given in testimony that I have in front of me, is that it will reduce the cost of the overall claim cost by 5% per year, and if it does that, it's a annual saving of $9 million. Why would changing this thing to a public corporation reduce the claim cost?
I'm not sure that I can go into the specifics as to exactly where the cost savings would occur. They would, my understanding from hearing a certain testimony given at the at the task force, and also Mr. Gill is here. He might be able to provide some additional information on that. My understanding is we would be able to obtain our employees and the officers who work at the marketplace. We would be able to retain these people because we could pay competitively. We would not be dealing with the red tape problems, so to speak, contracting, of the printing aspects. When they can go to the marketplace to obtain their printing.
There'd be no red tape if this was a public corporation.
This is my understanding, yes, sir.
Well, how? What kind of guarantee you have that you get rid of red tape just because you changed the...
I think Bill Wyatt, Senator Troll's position would be, since they're out of the merit system, that they're going to hire these people at slave labor prices.
Oh,
and they're going to save money that way.
Are you saying
I don't
that?
Think that's feasible, sir.
Yeah, that's what... do you plan to save money in terms of your employees? Is that how you want to do this?
Perhaps we could have Mr. Gill come up and provide you with a specific.
Mr. Gill,
he is the administrator of the state accident.
Is he supportive of this legislation?
Very much so.
Okay, maybe he could help.
Did Mr. Gill give you the information that they could reduce costs by 5%?
Yes, sir.
What will you be able to do, Mr. Gill, with that organization you can't do with this organization?
A great deal needs to be understood. Is you're certainly not going to save money administratively.
You're not.
You're not talking about reducing the cost of hiring employees. That certainly is the impact, or where the great cost saving comes, are in claims themselves. Either one, reducing accidents, or reducing the time frame in which an injured worker is off work.
How are you going to reduce accidents by doing this?
At the present time, there's a number of things we do that actually reduce costs. And primarily what they're involved in is direct relationship with employers, of getting safety programs, and we're talking about employers and employ a great number of employees, hiring the kind of people like industrial nurses, to work with injured workers. The present time, for instance, example, this last year we were involved in a freeze of employing people, and from a state perspective that was very good. From a perspective of an insurance company, that was very bad. As we lost people off the payroll for one reason or another, it was very difficult to replace them, and sometimes we couldn't. That means in safety services in some way we couldn't provide that because we were in a state freeze of employees.
So you would want more employees.
Well, I certainly want to replace the ones we have. Yeah. The employer is paying premiums, and for that, he needs and desperately needs certain kinds of services. And if you're not providing those, that means that either you're possibly creating a situation where accidents are going to occur, or you're not really handling the claim in a way that can help it return to a productive part of the community. We have a number of examples that show dramatic cost savings to employers when we get intimately involved with them in the program of claims management at the management level, safety management at the management level.
Now, you're saying you can't do this under your present structure.
At the present time, Senator, it's very difficult to get approval for certain kinds of positions, or for any position.
In other words, you're hamstrung at the executive department level. Is that what you're saying?
Certainly. I think the very process of going through the procedure, it might be months before you get approval through the exec department, get to the emergency board. Sometimes it takes about 6 months. Then you go through the process of training. And in the meantime, you might be going back through the same process. It's the time element of meeting the demands of the market in workman's compensation are horribly constrained under the system that we work.
What else would you do to save money in claims?
Well, I...
That's a lot of money, $9 million.
It's... If we can reduce, you know, the claim cost by 1%, that's about $1.8 million.
Just those you think you can buy 5%.
Yes, I definitely believe that we can buy 5%.
Does that mean you're going to be tougher to the people who have claims?
No, we're going to be more informative to them. Mm-hmm. That we have a number of programs that we would like to institute, and we lack the ability to do that just in holding trained people. Once we train them and we get them on board, they're very attractive in the marketplace, and they oftentimes leave us for...
So you pay them more to keep them?
Well, yeah, I think we would pay them competitive prices, salaries for one thing, and for another, provide some opportunities for advancement that we can.
Chairman?
Yeah. Just a minute.
Go ahead.
I wanted to ask a question here first. What guarantee do you have, Chuck, with the Border Commission, if you're under a Border Commission, as proposed in this bill, that you're going to have any easier in hiring new employees or buying stationery or whatever you want to do than you do presently? Do you have any assurances that this will happen?
I don't think it's just the Board of Directors, Senator. It's some other provisions in the law that allow us to...
In this bill?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What are they?
Well, they will allow us to do our own purchasing, for one thing. And they would allow us, you know, to be in business, in a sense, to operate like a normal business instead of going through the lengthy procedures we now have to go through to acquire equipment or to acquire paper or to get printing. And that's a position of equity, I suppose, and timeliness.
We should work on those things.
I'm also anxious to hear the reason that your salaries are below that of others.
Not at all levels. I wouldn't want to imply that all salaries are below. They aren't.
Well, there are certain areas. The testimony of Jim here that was one of the reasons, and I think you indicated that
yeah,
you could hire the type of people you wanted, and evidently Bill Wyatt's not doing his job, you know.
I'm saying that we're in a competitive market in certain areas, and certain of our classifications in the specialty areas in claims management and safety, yeah, we're very competitive. And in that sense, that I think I've indicated before, that there are a great many of our people working out with other companies now that they get trained and they are offered better jobs and they leave and we end up
business.
That's I think that's fine. I just would like to train our own people and hang on to them for a while and provide without training for everybody else.
How long's your top staff been with you now?
Top staff? Oh, they've been with me a long time. They've been with. I'm not complaining about my salary, and I'm not complaining about their salary. I'm complaining about the frontline people. And I don't think it's just salary that I'm talking about. I'm talking about being able to move timely in the marketplace to provide the services that the employer needs in this very dramatic field of workman's compensation. They need a great deal of help in managing their operations under workman's compensation law. We feel that we got the tools to do that. We just need the wherewithal to carry it out.
Mr. Chairman, you know, Chuck, this has gone right over me.
Okay.
Where are you getting the money to fund this?
Where are we getting the money to fund it?
Yes. I mean, where's the money come to pay these employees' salaries? Where do you get the money to purchase this equipment?
Well, we get it now from the premiums that we collect from the employer.
So you would be completely divorced from the legislature?
Under the bill, yes.
So you would never come to the legislature for any appropriation?
No. That's the way the bill is written.
And the salaries that you pay now, do you not get the appropriation from the legislature to pay your employee salaries?
We get the authorization for the appropriation from our own funds, yes.
Okay. But you would be totally divorced from the legislature completely?
under the bill, there would be the board of directors would approve the budget, just like they would under any other corporation or insurance company.
And so there's this public corporation existing. And where's the, in this system of government we have called checks and balances, where's the checks and balance on this? I know who created it. It's in the governor's office because he appoints the board of directors. But now, where is the check on the governor?
Well, there's a...
I think you should have listened to Senator Smith because I think he gave you your answer. I wanted to know if you were going to tell me that, though. It's obvious. The only check is the people. There is none in the other branch of the government. That's what you're
the talking. Marketplace, the people that we deal with, if we don't provide the kind of, you know, program they need,
Chuck, if this was approved, and I want you to know that I'm not, I think it's an idea that needs to be discussed. We could go to the monopolistic system again, couldn't we? Very easily.
Certainly.
And we wouldn't need private carriers if we agree with this concept.
Oh, I think it'd go either way. If you agree with that concept, you could... I don't think that changes anything.
Well, you actually become a private carrier under the guise of a public corporation.
We began to operate more like a private carrier in the sense of the freedoms, yes. What's really needed in the system is a response to the needs of the employer, not the needs of the insurance industry or the needs of SAFE, but the needs of the employer. And he needs some help out there to manage this program. And I think what this bill does is offer an opportunity for him to get that help in a more dynamic way than he's presently getting.
Chairman, you know, Chuck, I've listened to you for 2 days in here telling me about the needs of the employer. And, you know, one of the major problems with your agency right now is the people out there, the injured workmen, had very little faith in you and your system because they think you're on the employer side. And what you've told me the last 2 times is you agree with that. And they've got it broken up. Now, it's wrong for them to think that it's an employee-employer. But you told me for 2 days that you believe that the function of the SAFE is to represent the employer. And I think that that's what the employees are concerned about. The injured worker, when he gets out there, because he thinks that's exactly what's happening to him every time he calls you or talks to your people.
Senator, I appreciate what you're saying. It's a matter of, I guess, semantics of when you say the needs of the employer. I'm not divorcing the employee from that. The employer's desperate need is to take care of his employees. That's what his need is. They're one and the same. And what his need is to remove those hazards and to provide an atmosphere where accidents don't occur, and then after they occur, to help get that person back to work. Now, if I say the needs of the employer, I hope it's never construed in the fact that that is a need in a kind of a adversary situation of employer against employee. That certainly isn't what I intend to mean. And I can be glad to show you exactly what we have done in a number of areas just to meet those ends.
Mr. Chairman, just one last thing, and get off of this. You know, it would appear to me that just reading my limited history of government that our founding fathers, when they developed this tripartite system of government, knew that there was an inefficiency in it. And the fact is, if they wanted to be efficient, it's obvious that all they had to do was develop either a monarchy or a totalitarian and say, you do it. And I'm concerned about moving to this approach that what you're telling me is that you found a way to be more efficient. I don't need a checks and balance in government anymore. What I need to do is just to be able to get my own little system here, which I have complete autonomous control, and then I can be more efficient with you people. And I guess what I'm concerned about is it seems to go against everything that I've been told about our system of government, with the need for a checks and balance with administrative government and with the legislature. And you've just moved us out of this business completely, and I have real problems with that. Because you are, and I don't say this derogatorily, you're a bureaucrat. And we are supposed to be, in this system, the representatives of the people. And I have difficulty just telling my constituents I no longer have any input with that agency. And I know Senator Smith would say that the people can go to the governor. But there was a reason why that we've got representatives elected for 2 years, and I'm just opposed to that idea.
Did you know about this bill prior to the time it was being drafted? Were you aware that this bill was being drafted?
No, I was not.
So it was just sprung on you then, and you were told...
Well, I was made aware of it after it was drafted and was asked for some input to it.
You weren't the one that had requested.
No, not at all.
Drafted.
No.
I think that's understood.
No.
Mr. Chairman?
I'm sorry, Senator. I thought maybe Mr. Gill was actually had
Senator
contemplated
Trump.
And
yeah.
Gave birth to this idea.
To follow up on Senator Kulongowski's statement about balance of power and so forth, it seems as though, as you described what you think the advantages would be in operating as a public insurance corporation, there also is not much check from the governor's office on your operations either, other than the appointment of the commission or whatever you call the board of directors. I guess you're going to call it board of directors. Other than that, the executive department doesn't have any sway over your operations either. So there's not much of a check at all except the appointing power. How long is the board of directors going to be appointed for?
They're 4-year terms, I believe.
And staggered.
They're staggered terms.
Right. So basically, you're just going to be responsible for that board of directors and nobody else, really.
That's whoever the board of directors appoints as manager. Certainly, they can appoint somebody.
Seems to me like it's really, there are not many checks at all on it.
If I could speak to a couple of these concerns, Senator, the question of monopolistic problems, monarchical problems, if you will. It appears that basically it's the opposite. It's trying to put SAFE as an insurance carrier out into the marketplace. It's the opposite of a monopolistic tendency. It's if they don't compete and compete both with respect to with respect to safety, with respect to premium costs, and with respect to putting that injured worker back to work, those employers are going to go to one of the other carriers. In other words, the checks and balances
does them all right now.
Can't they do that now?
Better than any of those private insurers in the state now.
It's going to...
You're going to make them even better?
That's the hope, sir, yes.
And this can be documented, as far as costs are concerned.
If this were the problem, I'd say go ahead, we should have it. But I don't think this is true.
Sure.
I would like the governor to show figures where this is true, where it's cheaper, and they can save money. Bob?
Tell me the difference, in your opinion, between this quasi-public corporate structure and simply going to all private insurance situation.
I think there's a value in the same concept that we have now. All this is doing is not changing the principle of
of what SAFE is. It's changing the operating mode of it in a sense administratively, being able to respond. It's a nonprofit. It certainly is going to maintain the best interests of the Oregon workman and the Oregon worker and the Oregon employer in the management of the fund. The same principle will apply in relationship to, for instance, the investment earnings of the reserves, which will continue to flow back into the system. That doesn't change. That isn't the case necessarily in the private sector. There still is the opportunity to be innovative in the system with Oregon in mind only and not with the rest of the country in mind. So it still acts as a weather vane, if you will, or a barometer of what can be done in the system, and I think it truly creates the competitive posture that the legislature wanted in 1965. That
tell me how you would feel philosophically about allowing the legislature to review the budget of the quasi-public corporation.
I think it would be a good idea to have a review of the budget, I think, set by the board of directors with the intent of carrying out the policy that they would set down, but have a review process by the legislature. I don't see any problem in that.
You don't see that affecting the direction or the administration as you've outlined it in this bill?
No, as long as the legislature allows the board of directors to develop the budget in the manner that's needed in the system, and that they set up a review process, the legislature can review that budget.
Well, of course, we do this, as you know, with many of the fee-supported kinds of agencies where they're totally fee-supported, and the legislature merely, as a function, reviews that budget and does put some parameters on it.
Yeah.
You think that...
Well, when you say put some parameters on it, let me tell you what's happened over the years. There are some years where the parameters are such that there's a need to keep the general fund down, and in that there is feeling of cutting back, and so there's sometimes an arbitrary indication. We know that you're not a general fund agency and that you're funded by employers through premiums, but you need to be the same as every other agency, so cut your budget by 10% or 20%. Now, I think if it's reviewed, it has to be reviewed by what it's hoping to accomplish by itself. And if the board of directors said they need to cut the budget 20%, that's fine. If they say it needs to hold, that's fine. I think a review by the legislature to see if that's prudent or reasonable under those conditions is good.
Well, I'm not sure I understand.
I guess I don't understand what you mean by review,
well,
maybe.
I'm trying to get at Senator Kulongoski's check and balance question with my question, and trying to fit in a legislative input without destroying the concept that you're bringing. And so I'm merely asking these questions to attempt to see if there is any area that we can provide a check and balance, which is an obvious of obvious interest, without destroying the concept of your quasi public corporation.
Ray, I'm sure there is. I'm sure that review by the legislature is a good idea, especially initially.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is the just conceptual. I'm just investigating, and I'm don't want to take up too much time.
No, I think it's a good exchange.
I thought that possibly they could come back, or we could take this further down the road somewhere.
It appears to me that it's the word review. Chuck appears to me to be saying, look, but don't touch. And you're saying, well, look and touch.
Well, Chairman, or maybe there's some middle ground. I don't know. That's what I'm trying to get at.
I might point out that there are several other states that do this very thing. California, notably, is one where their board of directors sets the budget. And I think there is some general review by the legislature, but it's a review and explanation of what they're doing primarily. And I suppose if they felt that there was really the things they were doing they shouldn't do, they'd probably do away with the system, but they worked with that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was only going to follow up with other thought, and that is that since each one of these members of the board would be gubernatorial appointments, and the Senate now is in a beginning of a confirmation situation, if the direction of the public corporation was not in agreement with the legislative process, there's an action by the legislature through the confirmation of the members of the board of directors. There's another check.
I think that's Senator Schultz.
Yes. One of the big arguments made in favor of this clearly has to do with the so-called estimated savings of $9 million in annual savings. And I'd like for you to break it down in some kind of document so you can show us how you're going to
Certainly.
Save $9 million a year.
Certainly.
Okay. I think that would be very helpful.
I think there's another check of a sort, too, at the administrative level. The Secretary of State's auditing functions would still apply to the State Accident Insurance Fund Corporation.
That's both good and bad.
I won't argue with that. I didn't say anything.
I was waiting for the response check.
Is there any other questions, Mr. Russell or Mr. Gill?
Mr. Chairman, I only want to say one other thing, and that is that in no way do I want to injure Mr. Russell's credibility before this committee, but I want you to know that he was raised in Burns, and we're very proud of him.
Thank you very much, both of you. Ms. Ferris?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, I guess I should say, and members of the committee, I will be brief since we are going to have extensive amendments to the bill. I don't really see much point in saying a great deal. I would like to say that I do represent the Oregon Workers' Compensation Federation, which is a group of five carriers. These carriers are EBI, Industrial Indemnity, Safeco, Mission, and Argonaut. And we do support the concept of the bill. Of the 50 states, 32 states, as you probably all know, are private insurance only. There is no state fund. 12 states have a state fund, 6 are monopoly. Of the 12 states that have a state fund, I have been unable to determine at this point how many of them have the type of setup that is contemplated here, but we do know that California has a very similar type of settlement setup contemplated. I personally feel that private industry is always more efficient than government. By the very nature of government, it is cumbersome. And this moves it a little closer to private industry. We welcome it because I think that the whole thing is competition. If we can meet them on the same level and stay in business, or if they can stay in business with us, that can't help but reflect good to the workmen by putting out a better product at a lesser cost. For that reason, we favor it. I might say also that SAFE
I think you're right, Evelyn. If you
Let me ask you this, though. The insurance companies fought competition here for a period of years. Now you say you're... Yes, you did.
Fought competition?
Yes, when you fought the bill that would allow companies to deviate, the commissioner's bill. So what you're wanting is competition and this bill will keep SAFE out from under the National Rating Bureau. So they could set their, I would presume that, would they be allowed to set their own rates then, Chuck?
Well, I think...
Would this make you more competitive in that respect, where you could would deviate? And what's the advantage as far as the employer is concerned?
Well, hopefully less cost, Mr. Chairman. I might say that SAFE, as you know, writes 60% of the insurance, so the rates are reflected by SAFE's costs very greatly. If SAFE feels that they can cut down on them that much, I think that's to be encouraged. We are not afraid of the competition, and I think that's good. I think it's good for SAFE to have us. It's good for us to have SAFE.
The amendments, you know, take SAFE out of the rating organization.
Well,
I hope you're aware of that.
Mr. Chairman, as I say, I haven't seen the
amendment.
That's
all right with you, though, and that's all right with the people you represent.
I can't answer that one because I'm not prepared to speak for him until we look at the amendment.
Okay, any further questions?
Thank you.
If not, thank you, Ellen.
Bill Wyatt.
Bill Wyatt, Oregon State Employees Association.
You remember. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bill Wyatt with the Oregon State Employees Association. I'm concerned, frankly, only with one of the provisions of the bill as it's printed, and I've not seen the amendment, so I don't know if I should be concerned with those in addition. The only problem with, for us at least, of exempting the employees of the fund from the merit system law is that our bargaining unit there is defined as all the classified employees with certain very specific exceptions. So the measure would have the effect of automatically decertifying us, and I would like to think that that is an inadvertent error on the part of the drafter of this measure, yet it's about the third time this session that we've faced legislation which would have had the effect of automatically decertifying one of our bargaining units, and we're, of course, not very pleased about that prospect. I would like to say that I with respect to employee salaries, concur with Mr. Russell and Mr. Gill that something we've been saying for some time is that many of those classifications are not competitive, and of course we continue to pursue that. I have no testimony with respect to the substance of the measure, but would like the committee to give consideration to that exemption because it has a rather drastic effect.
Would they, Bill, would they still be eligible as Oregon State employees when they set up a private...
Quasi and public corporations are still subject to Chapter 243, the Collective Bargaining Act. I don't know if they've exempted themselves from that in the amendments or not, but if things stand as they are, we would be automatically decertified and are not very excited about that.
I see Chuck Gill shaking his head, so I guess that you're still...
subject to the Collective Bargaining Act, but we'd have no bargaining unit there.
Have any questions? Any further questions? If not, thank you. Who wants to... is Jim here yet? Russell? Does he... Did you want to present these amendments here?
Yes, sir, I do.
Okay.
First time we've heard this one. First.
The committee does have the amendments. On behalf of the governor, I would like to present those amendments at this time to the committee and ask that the amendments be incorporated into the bill and that the bill be engrossed with these amendments.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I think out of courtesy to the governor that we ought to do this, even though it is a good idea to have a bill ready first time you bring it rather than...
You have it
Yeah, so let's I move that we have the bill engrossed. Then we consider it again.
Senator Crow has moves that the we have the bill engrossed. I don't think the roll call is needed on this.
It requires that we send to the floor.
The bill we're not going to send it to the floor. We're just going to have it engrossed.
You're going to have it printed engrossed or just the committee engrossed?
Printed
engrossed is an action of the committee to re-engross or to engross the bill. Okay.
Call the roll. I still don't think it's that. We'll find out about that. I think it's just there's no objection.
Senator Hammond?
Aye.
Senator Hannan?
Aye.
Senator Clint?
Aye.
Senator Troll?
Aye.
Senator Wingard? Senator Kip Kulongoski?
Aye.
Senator Groner?
Aye. So ordered. Okay, Jim, I think we'll have it we'll have the bill engrossed and we'll have another hearing on this.
Thank you, sir, and we'll get the factual documents that you'd like to request to share.
Okay, we have a short bill, 330. Roger Arbach and Don Satchel. Why don't you both come forward here? Roger, you want to go first?
Thank you, Senator Groner. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Auerbach, and I'm speaking for the interests of the Public Employee Standing Committee of the Oregon AFL-CIO, the group which requested this piece of legislation. For those members of the committee who are familiar with the Public Employee Collective Bargaining Act, and especially those members who were part of the 1973 Oregon legislature, this bill may appear to be both obvious and redundant. ORS Chapter 243 was the most carefully drafted and refined in 1973 with two major purposes: to provide for an orderly process of peaceful resolution of differences between public employee unions and public employers, and to avoid giving either party an unfair advantage in the bargaining process. That was clearly the intent 6 years ago. Senate Bill 330 simply states the obvious, primarily for the benefit of the Oregon courts. The need for Senate Bill 330 stems from a September 1977 Court of Appeals decision in the case of Wasco County versus the Employment Relations Board and the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. In this case, the Employment Relations Board found Wasco County guilty of an unfair labor practice for failure to bargain in good faith, and the Oregon Court of Appeals reversed that decision. The details of the case are quite simple. Wasco County and the Employees Union were in the process of selecting a fact finder when the county unilaterally implemented a wage increase, thus undermining the position of the union. Since the union was prohibited from taking any self-help action, such as a strike, until all statutory steps had been exhausted, and specifically no sooner than 35 days after the receipt of the fact finder's recommendation, the Employment Relations Board concluded that the public employer is also prohibited from taking any self-help measures under the same timeline. In its written decision, the Employment Relations Board interpreted quite correctly that the legislature intended that there be a balancing of self-help measures available to the parties. The Court of Appeals reversed the Employment Relations Board, stating that statutory silence as to the employer's rights and restrictions is no evidence whatever of a legislative desire for symmetry. The passage of Senate Bill 330 would provide clear evidence of a legislative desire for needed balance in the collective bargaining process. Thank you.
Don?
My name is Don Satchel. I'm speaking on behalf of the Oregon Education Association, would like to put on the record our support for Senate Bill 330. We have not had a problem in this area yet. There is a potential that a problem could develop sometime out there with this. In reality, it would make it very similar to the private sector, and the real essence of the bill would encourage good faith negotiations on both parts during a very critical time, and that's
when they are in mediation, when they're in fact-finding and preparing or headed towards a strike or a settlement, one of the two, that it would encourage good faith bargaining on both sides, and I think it's a good bill and should pass. Would be happy to respond to questions.
Are there any questions? If not, John and Roger, I'm going to ask, we have Theodore Kulongoski working, Senator Kulongoski working on with a subcommittee another bill, 58. Will you let's put that in the same package and see if we can't work them out and come back. That satisfactory to you? Okay. Anything further to come before the committee? If not, we are adjourned. Have a nice weekend.